Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Please hold your calls for a few minutes because we have with us our good friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Dr. Cuddy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, why don't we just take off, and I'm just going to let you pick up talking because my voice is having a little problem.
Okay, sure. what I'd like to do, this is the day before the second anniversary of September 11th, the terrorist attack of a couple of years ago. And so what I'd like to do is just go over some of the things that have happened and explain them in terms of today and what will be happening. And that involves a little recap of our previous programs that we've had. Your listeners may remember that I've had several books which are offered by Radio Liberty. One of them is Secret Records Revealed, which came out 5 or 6 years ago, and that was followed by The Globalists, which came out a couple of months prior to the September 11th attacks. And in both of those books, what I try to do, as in other books, is give the quotations by the people themselves, FDR, Woodrow Wilson, Bill Clinton, and so on. And then what I do briefly is try and say, if there is this power elite which is controlling things, what might they do in the future? How would they have us progress towards the New World Order, which I believe is a synthesis of Western capitalism and Eastern capitalism into a world socialist government, is the ultimate aim. And so what I try to do in those two books is I said, in the future, there could be a terrorist attack after which the public, through this conditioning process, would be more willing to give up some of their freedoms in order to have peace and security. Sure enough, a couple of months after the Globalists came out, the September 11th attack occurred, and that very afternoon, ABC News, Washington Post, released poll results very quickly that showed two-thirds of the American public would be willing to do exactly that, give up some of their freedoms in order to have peace and security. I had, not too long ago, about a month or so ago, a Knight Ridder column that went out, and it was published in a number of papers. And basically what I did was ask a number of questions, which we have been over in the past on Radio Liberty programs, such as how did top Pentagon, or why did top Pentagon officials on September 10th of 2001 suddenly cancel their travel plans for the next morning, apparently because of security concerns. And I went over some other questions, too. And after that, a person wrote to me, responded, said, well, instead of just raising some questions, why don't you give us some answers? And so what I've tried to do is follow that up with another column, which should be coming out probably tomorrow, giving some of those answers, and we can pick up after the break.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills from overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And with us this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And we're going to be talking about what really happened on September 11th, 2 years ago. And, of course, there's so many unanswered questions. The Bush administration is withholding all sorts of information. They censored the recent report that came out. If there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? Are they trying to keep the truth from Osama bin Laden? We'll pick up the story there, Dennis.
Okay. What I think happened, as I've explained in some previous programs, is the power elite doesn't, they try and have, I guess what you call is plausible denial, or a term like that, so that they remove themselves one step from any direct involvement. So when people say, do you think the power elite told the hijackers to do what they did, I say, well, probably not. They probably didn't call up 19 people and tell them, okay, now tomorrow you get these planes and fly them into the building. What they usually do is create situations, and then they can pretty well predict, as I did in those two books, Secret Records Revealed and The Globalist, what would happen. The fact that 19 terrorists actually hijacked planes and flew them into buildings was sort of irrelevant to the power elite. I mean, they could have had 19 people derailing passenger trains. It doesn't matter. What they do is they create situations such as supporting an autocratic elite in Saudi Arabia, to which people like Osama bin Laden will rebel, especially when American troops come during the first Gulf War and stay there, and they consider that their holy land, and so forth. And we know that Zbigniew Brzezinski, in his book several years ago, The Grand Chessboard, pretty well said what would happen. He said, we're going to manipulate people there. We need the oil. We need a military security presence for our allies. And then he says, there may be some Islamists who don't like this. We may have some sort of terrorist response, but we'll have to deal with it, and so on. So they pretty well can predict that there can be this reaction. So what I think happened, regardless of any direct involvement by the power elite, which, as I said, they always try to keep themselves one step removed from anything, so there's no real direct culpability, is I think what happened is on August 6th of 2001, in that CIA briefing to President Bush, which they are adamantly refusing to release the details of it, I think if we found out what was in there, what we probably find out is that there was an increasing possibility they were aware of.
I'm going to have to interrupt you, Dennis. We're just going to have to bring one more station on board, and then we'll get right back to the discussion. Well, Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and he's talking about the briefing the president had on the 6th of August, and we know that they knew that they were planning on hijacking planes and flying, and they specifically mentioned going into the World Trade Center, and if anybody doubts that, that was in Eleanor Hill's testimony. She chaired the commission that investigated this. They put the report out. They deleted her testimony. Any reference to the things that she said, but we have that, and anybody who wants to get that can get it from us. So they knew that they were going to hijack planes, and they knew they were going to fly them at the World Trade Center, because she said this was one of the things they suggested. So you pick up the story from there, Dennis.
Okay, picking up on what you just said, obviously they were aware of Project Bojinka. We've been on previous programs describing how that had occurred back in 1998. Dale Watson, who was head of the counterterrorism effort at the time, and the FBI was testifying before Congress how they were on top of everything and really coordinating activities with the CIA and NSA and so forth. And he was aware of Project Bojinka. And in one of my books, Cover Up, I actually put Rafael Garcia, who is the CEO of a mega group, is called the Philippine Computer Company, that deciphered Abdul Hakim Murad's laptop. He was the co-conspirator with Ramzi Youssef on the first World Trade Center bombing, and how the second part of that plan did actually involve hijacking airplanes and flying them into the Pentagon or White House, Transamerica Building, Sears Tower, and so forth.
Now, well, wait a minute. Don't forget the World Trade Center. It specifically specified the World Trade Center.
And in Bill Gertz's column, of course, as you said, the World Trade Center as well was very, very much in there. And this was 2 months in advance of the September 11th attack that Bill Gertz and a backgrounder that went out over North, it's actually www.northwestairlinesflightattendant and so forth. You can't get it now, but at the time, It was on a website, and, you know, if you were a Northwest Airlines flight attendant, you could read this stuff.
And there was a similar one on the Washington Times website as well. And anybody who'd like to see that, Bill Gertz backgrounder, which we have copies of, which he denies ever writing now, would be glad to send it to you. So obviously Bill Gertz, you know, gets a lot of information, CIA leaks, and I'm sure he doesn't want to shut them off. So he came onto one of my programs and denied he had written, and I said, but I have it right here. He said, well, that was a mistake. I shouldn't have written it, or something, words to that effect.
Yeah, well, he forgot to do something then, because, well, that was deleted. He forgot to delete the international version. I think it's called the World Tribune, that's connected with the Washington Times, which as of December, after September 11th, still had that same article mentioning the World Trade Center.
Didn't you actually talk to Bill Gertz about
it? Oh, yes. Yeah,
what did he tell you?
Well, after his book came out, I said, how come you don't have this information in there? And he said just what you said. He said, oh, that was a mistake. That shouldn't have been in there. And, of course, when you talked to him, you said, but, Bill, you got the scoop of the century. How come you're not fessing up, as they say, to this? And he just, you know, hemmed and hawed. And I ran into the same sort of experience with Evan Thomas, the bureau chief of Newsweek, when he started throwing, you can always tell when these guys are up to something when they start throwing out that term, I don't believe in conspiracy theories. Because what I was trying to point out is, even if one doesn't believe in conspiracy theories, you either have to believe that Newsweek is totally incompetent, or that they got it right.
You have to explain to our listeners what they got in their article right, because they were talking about people from the Defense Department who canceled their flight for the 11th of September on the 10th of September, and when you called Evan Thomas to ask him who they were and why they canceled, why he didn't want to talk about it.
Okay, well, there were two articles, the September 13th one by Michael Hirsch, and he said he sort of didn't even remember it, and I had to remind him of the title, and he said, oh, yes, Mark Hosenball was the researcher for that, and so call Mark, he said. And so I did, and Mark Hosenball said, I asked him, did you find out who the top Pentagon officials who on September 10th suddenly canceled their travel plans for the next morning, apparently because of security concerns? He said no, and so I said, well, did you not ask who they were? Did you ask and they wouldn't tell you? And then he said, quote, I don't want to talk about it anymore. So I decided to go in and call Evan Thomas, since his name, as well as Hosenball's, was on the second article, the September 24th in Newsweek. And Evan Thomas gave me this runaround about he didn't believe in conspiracy theories and how Congress investigated this general subject, and if there was anything to it, they would have found something. Now, what you have to remember as a listener to Radio Liberty, that's really strange. I mean, that's like Woodward and Bernstein going to Haldeman and Ehrlichman and saying, is there anything to this Watergate thing? And they'll say, why, no, Bob, Carl. And they said, oh, okay, well, that's the end of that. So I don't know that Newsweek ever takes the congressional investigation's word for anything. Plus, this was an article that appeared, the quotations, twice. So what you have to believe is that on September 13th, after checking this out with their legal division and all that sort of stuff, the Newsweek prints this, we're supposed to believe that either the Pentagon the very next day didn't call them up, in which case the story's true, or that the Pentagon did call them up and say, you people don't know what you're talking about, we want a retraction or keep your mouth shut or whatever, and 10 days after that, on the 14th, Newsweek comes out with the same article or the same information again.
On the 24th, right.
The 24th.
Right.
Right. So, you know, I mean, something is slightly fishy there. So what I'm thinking is, on August 6th, in that briefing, what the White House doesn't want you to know is that there was mention in there of a possible hijacking, and that it was within the U.S. And that's why not only these top Pentagon officials did what they did, but Mayor Willie Brown, on September 10th, mayor of San Francisco, was notified late at night, you know, not 2 in the afternoon. I mean, somebody had to think it was important enough to call him late at night and give him this warning, saying that he and all Americans should watch your air travel because something's in the works here.
But you know what? So what's really interesting about that story is you can see the hands of the CIA all over that, because on the 12th, the article appeared in the Chronicle, deleting exactly what you said. that article was pulled from all the other editions of the Chronicle and either didn't get up on the internet or was pulled down. So they did not want the American people to know that. It snuck through. The CIA didn't realize it was going to be there. The last thing they want is for anyone to suspect that there was prior knowledge, because think of the implications. Think of the implications of all those people being allowed to be killed, and the voice coming in over the loudspeaker in the South Tower saying, stay at your seats, stay at your post, do not evacuate the building. While they're looking out, they can see the North Tower and the smoke billowing out and the flames and the people jumping to their deaths. And the loudspeaker is saying, don't you dare move, or don't move, you're to stay right where you are. Of course, ensuring that they would die as well when the second plane hit.
Right, and so what you have is they don't want the information out because Willie Brown was flying from San Francisco to New York, and the top Pentagon officials were here. That's within the U.S. Afterwards, the administration kept saying, oh, we knew there might be a hijacking, but we thought it was overseas. Well, these alerts are given to people flying in the U.S. That's what I think they're very scared that the American public will find out, because if they find that out, the next question is, well, if you knew this might happen, where was your preventive contingency planning? My thinking is, where did this stuff come from? Well, it could have been one of these foreign intercepts, like the 2 days before when they intercepted Osama calling his stepmother, saying in 2 days something big's going to happen. It could have been one of these NSA, National Security Agency intercepts. Now, again, this is something your listeners need to think about. We are told by the media, by Evan Thomas, Newsweek types, by everybody that, oh, yes, we all know the NSA said they had an intercept on September 10th, but, golly, they just didn't get it translated until September 12th. Now, remember, this is one day after. They're dilly-dallying around on the 11th, waiting another day, and finally intercepting and finally translating these intercepts and say, oh, my goodness, look, if we had just known this, we could have prevented it. That doesn't seem to hold water to me, given that we know for a fact that at 9:53 on the morning of the 11th, they had an intercept saying another plane is going to hit. They translated that thing immediately, got it to George Tenet, director of the CIA, who in turn got it to Rumsfeld, all by about noon in 2 hours. Now, if they could do that, how come we're supposed to believe that they're waiting another full day before intercepting those messages they got, before they translated the intercepts they got on the 10th? That's really hard to believe.
Well, I think there are a lot of things that are hard to believe. If you think the trouble is they've dumbed down so many of the American people to just believe whatever they see on television or whatever they hear on radio, or they read Time or Newsweek or U.S. News and World Report, which are all part and controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations, because they control then both the conservative and liberal media. They control then what the American people think. That's so hard for people to believe, but it's really true.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. And this that last information I gave is also in the book Cover Up, that's offered by Radio Liberty. And in that book, I also tried to see, you know, what might happen in the future. I said what to look for in terms not only September 11th, but the war with Iraq. And I indicated there that, and it came out the book just before the war started. And I said if we have a conflict, what you look for is whether it's a staged war or a real war. If it's a staged war, I said you would look for a, you know, certain things, such as a relatively quick war, relatively few casualties on the Allied forces' part. And the reason I said that was because if it was a real war, you would have certain things done by an evil dictator like Saddam. He'd launch his Al-Samud and Scud missiles at Israel and blow up the oil fields and clog the Euphrates River and blow up the Safwan Highway and the air bases and so on, which didn't happen. And I'll continue after the break.
No. Thank you. A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is radio health journalist Bill Sardi. Hey, a lot of smart supplement users like to check out the facts before they purchase an herbal product. So go to www.lifespannnutrition.com and read all about Alamax, the new odorless, 100% pure Allicin garlic extract imported from Great Britain. You'll find Alamax is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. Check it out at www.lifespannnutrition.com or call 866-405-4000 to learn more about this breakthrough in garlic technology called Alamax. Call 1-866-405-4000 today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention some of Dr. Dennis Cuddy's books we carry, and if you haven't got them in your library, you need to have them. Secret Records Revealed is one of my favorite. That's Secret Records Revealed. And then, of course, we carry the Globalist. We carry his Now is the Dawning, and those three books will give you an entire college education in what we're talking about. We carry his book on the NEA, The Road to Socialism, The Timeline for the education, the New World Order education. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Now, we also carry his book, The Cover-Up. We also carry up, what's that other little one about 9-1-1 prior knowledge?
September 11th prior knowledge.
September 11th prior knowledge. So they're all available by calling Radio Liberty. You want to get Dr. Cuddy's books, you want to study his books, you'll get tremendous, tremendous insight. They're all inexpensive. But, of course, get the information, help get this out across America. And then, of course, I want to mention a couple of other things. As you know, we carry Phenopoly. And this is a program that will teach you or your children or your grandchildren how to read phonetically, how to pronounce words phonetically, how to spell phonetically. And spelling is such a terrible problem, as you see young people today, and they just can't spell anything because they've never been grounded in phonics. Well, this is a wonderful program. It's actually a board game. It's played just like Monopoly. There are five board games, and there are two bonus games. We throw in a couple of books on this subject so that you can understand that they've been deliberately dumbing down the children of this country. If you'd like, of course, to get a Phenopoly set, it's as easy as giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Most of these programs are $200, $300, $400, $500 or more. And, of course, Phenopoly is $139.95. It's truly a life-saving experience. And if you've been, even as an adult, don't be afraid to get one of these. We've had many, many people who have, and they've been so happy. Well, our special guest today is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're talking about, of course, what really happened on September 11th. And, you know, if you read the things on the Internet, read Eleanor Hill's testimony. She headed that committee, and, of course, she wasn't allowed to do a decent investigation. But what she said that first day should have been on the front pages of every newspaper, because she stressed how they keep saying, well, oh, we thought the attack was going to be overseas. She said it was very obvious. They knew the attack was going to be here. They knew it was going to involve airplanes. They knew it was going to involve airplanes that would crash into buildings, and they knew that one of those buildings was the World Trade Center because they'd already tried to blow it up, and they kept talking about it and talking about it. It's all there, and the fact that that was totally blacked out by the censored media is a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Pick it up from there, Dr. Cuddy.
Okay. Yes, as Eleanor Hill said, and there were, as I indicated, a number of reports, including federal report in September of 1999, saying Al-Qaeda's Martyrdom Battalion could hijack airliners and fly them into the buildings that you mentioned, and other reports as well. Just before the break, I was describing how in Cover Up, that book, not only with September 11th, but connecting the dots between that and Iraq, and how one would look for whether it was a staged or real war. What I think the strategy was from the beginning was to not confront the American forces, the Allied forces out in the open with tanks and so forth, but to just have sort of a token resistance all along the way as we came from Kuwait up towards Baghdad. But the idea was to actually remove any clothing that might signify that there were soldiers so that the Iraqis would blend into the population. They had about 100,000 or so Republican Guard, a couple of 100,000 regular army in addition to that, and we captured or killed nowhere near that amount. So we know they simply dispersed. And the idea, the strategy was, as I think his name is Baghdad Bob, they nicknamed him, and I remember toward the end he said with a chuckle, when they asked him about the American troops coming towards Baghdad, and he says, oh yes, very unconventional warfare. But I think the idea was, rather than confront us out in the open, what they would do is wait until we got into the Baghdad area, into Crete and Mosul and other places, and then we would have to disperse with a limited number of troops. They would watch us and be able, therefore, at their convenience, to pick us off in a sort of guerrilla warfare. And even though we're talking about bringing in some additional UN troops, the same sort of thing applies. And so what you have is a philosophy on our part that says, well, we will liberate these people from Saddam and they'll be grateful. But what you got to remember is during the first Gulf War, the Sunni Ba'athists lost about 100,000 soldiers there, and there were additional 35,000 or so civilians killed. And so you have each one of these, probably a young male, who has a mother, father, sister, brother, children, and so on. So you have about a million people there who really don't, even though they may not like Saddam, they don't like us either, because their brother or husband or whoever has been killed or severely wounded by Americans in the past. And so what happened was this effort is progressing now in terms of what we see. And so the process that the American forces are trying to use there is what I would call a sort of Delphi technique, where you have these elements, the Shiites in the majority and the Sunnis in the minority. And what they're starting to do more and more is say, well, we want to take over, we want you to leave. And what we're going to probably do is say, well, we will be glad to leave and turn over more and more authority to you if you can agree, if you can reach a consensus. Now, this is part of a larger plan globally, because the one world, the new world order, and one world government has to be accompanied by a one world religion. And so you can't have any fundamentalists. And that doesn't mean just fundamentalist Christians. It means fundamentalist Shiites, Sunnis, or whatever. And so what you will probably find there is that this process is in the works to make them compromise and compromise so that they will fit into this larger New World Order picture. Now, shortly, I guess a few months, about a month or so before Saddam's sons were killed, I was talking to you, Dr. Stanton, and I said, in the near future, what you'll probably find is that we'll find his sons and either capture or kill them. And we'll continue after the break.
All right, fine. Well, I think that, I think that we're going to keep our troops here indefinitely. I talked to a gentleman who's going over there as administrator just yesterday. He had to sign a 5-year contract. What do they know that they're not telling the American people? And, of course, what they really intend is permanent occupation of that area. So we're in real trouble, ladies and gentlemen. They've already spent $79 billion. They've asked for another $87 billion. Being an imperial force is a very, very expensive proposition, and an awful lot of boys are going to die for the aspirations of the elite. Thank you.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just comment that one of the best videos we've done in some time is called Iraq, The Untold Story. Now, it's really not just the story of Iraq. It's the story of all of the wars of the 20th century, starting with the Spanish-American War, the Boer War, and then the First World War and the Second World War. And, of course, when you, of course, go through them, you find they were all contrived wars. They were never fought for the reason that our men were sent overseas that they believed when they were fighting. And then, of course, we go, of course, into Korea and Vietnam and then the First Gulf War. And then we go into the project for the New American Century, which began planning this war back in 1998. We give you the references. If you get the syllabus with it, all the references are there. You can go up on the website if you don't want to get the syllabus, and look newamericancensory.org. And here you find Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz all in this little group planning on the war in Iraq back in 1998. And this was all planned ahead of time, but they had to have an excuse. How are we going to get the American people into this? They don't want to go to war. Well, we need an incident, and they talk about it. And one of the things they published in in the year 2000, entitled Rebuilding America's Defenses, on page 51. What we need is something like a catastrophic and catalyzing event, like another Pearl Harbor. That's their words, not mine. A catastrophic catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. Well, we had that on September 11th. And, of course, then we, of course, progressed to the war they wanted all along. Iraq, The Untold Story is a video you need to get. You can get it with or without the syllabus. Let me suggest you get the special, get them both. And they're available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War. Well, Dr. Stan, Dr. Cuddy, why don't you sort of pick up from there?
Okay. Before I pick up where I left off, let me say something about the comment that you just made about the catalyzing event. And that, of course, what we had, as you said, was September 11th. A lot of your listeners may say, well, this is very interesting and all, but it's academic. It was 2 years ago. And, yes, we do want to find out what happened, but, you know, it is in the past, and we haven't had anything happen since and so forth. It's really important that we find out and expose the truth of what happened, not just because that's a good thing to do, but the same sort of thing could happen tomorrow. And my concern is the American public and our leaders just seem to be sitting around not realizing that probably, and this is what I think, I don't think we're going to have a hijacking. That's very complicated. But there's nothing that could prevent a wealthy terrorist like Osama bin Laden from buying a Learjet and filing a perfectly normal-looking flight plan, but lo and behold, the Learjet is packed with high-intensity explosives, and nobody suspects anything because the plane's not off course. It's just that instead of landing at JFK, it just proceeds to slam into a building, the airport JFK. Or perhaps the helicopter. It's very easy for terrorists to obtain a helicopter, and so instead of sitting on the ground and trying to, you know, launch the shoulder launched rockets up to a plane, a passenger, a commercial plane ascending, which is a little tricky. They could just stick four or five of those in a helicopter, fly over a stadium in Los Angeles next time they have a football game or whatever, and they could probably do as much damage as the 3,000 people who lost their lives in the World Trade Center. The point is, we need to look at these things very hard. We need to demand of our leaders that they have been doing some sort of contingency preventive planning so that we have a sense of security that somebody is on top of this thing and won't let this type of thing happen again.
Well, you know, Dennis, I really think it's amazing. It's been 2 years. We've not had one serious attack other than the phony anthrax attack, which they knew was coming because Dick Cheney started on Cipro the very evening of the September 11th attack, so he knew it was coming. He just didn't want to tell anybody else it was coming. But other than that, there's been no attacks in the United States. There have been attacks elsewhere. How could that possibly be? Because we know that they had all sorts of terrorist cells here in the United States, and I believe that the reason there have been no other terrorist attacks is because we arrested them all because we knew who they were within the first 2 days after 9/11. That's 1,200 people, many of whom they're still holding secretly, and we can't release their names because we don't want Osama bin Laden to know who they are. No, we don't want the American people to know that we'd infiltrated the terrorist movement. We had our agents all the way through it, just as we had them in the militia movement here in the United States and within the Christian movement and certainly within the communist movement. They'd infiltrated this movement. They knew who they were, and they arrested them all. That's why there have been no more terrorist attacks. But we can't let the American people know. I think they're doing an amazing job. Now, if we do have another terrorist attack, it will be for the effect. But we've gone 2 years without a terrorist attack in the United States. We have open borders. We have no armed pilots. We have very, very few air marshals. They are adding 5,000 more. They didn't think it was necessary, but because of the clamor, they're going to put them on the planes because they know something the rest of us don't know. What is it that they know? Why they've been monitoring this, every aspect of it for many, many years. But we can't let the American people know that because then they would suspect we knew ahead of time and did nothing. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it's perfectly clear. I mean, if, as you said, if they were serious about homeland security, they would have secured the southern borders, which they still haven't done. Special Agent Robert Wright with the FBI, according to the news reports in his lawsuit against the FBI, it stated that it appeared as though the some of the agents, the FBI, simply knew who the terrorists were, but they didn't want to do anything about them. They did want to know who they were and where they were so they could arrest them after some incident. And so I think what you're saying is absolutely correct. And now picking up what where I left off before the break, when you said there would be a permanent occupation, I think you're right, of course, there. What I meant by the Delphi technique on the Shiites and the Sunnis was to try to pressure them into a consensus, which would make them more easily controllable. And I believe I talked to the same individual you did who's going over to be an assistant with Mr. Bremer in Baghdad on the 28th of August. And I told him at that time, I said, look, you have not yet seen the religious conflict break out between these elements, the Shiites and the Sunnis, primarily because the Shiites think under this, quote, democracy that they'll have, they will be the controlling majority. And then sure enough, the very next day, on the 29th, is when the leading Shiite was blown up coming out of the mosque. So what I think is going to happen next is, just like I said, that they would get his sons, Saddam's sons, I think in the not-too-distant future we'll probably get Saddam or a lookalike, and that'll be the question. Because we'll say, well, how do we know we've gotten Saddam? And we'll say, well, we have his DNA from 20 years ago. We, you know, have some sort of special operation where we go, you know, getting little hair clips of leaders around the world. But what to look for, just like when I said, look to see if it's a staged war or a real war. If this is Saddam, what will happen is shortly after we capture or kill him, supposedly, you will have tapes appearing. And they will be released at different stages from different parts of the country. They will be given to Al Jazeera and so on. And on the tapes, it will be Saddam's voice, really Saddam's voice, because during these past 4 months or so, he's probably been cranking out a lot of these tapes. And it'll say, the infidels have either captured my double or whatever, and they're lying to you, and we must fight on. If you don't hear news of such tapes, you need to be very suspicious as to whether we really got Saddam himself or a double. So I just, you know, want to put that out in advance in case this happens, as I think it might happen.
Well, you know, everything really is perception. They're playing games with our minds. You know, Osama bin Laden, we went to war with Osama bin Laden, and suddenly, you know, we just could just never find him. And, of course, I've talked to my friend Joel Scouser, who says he knows that people who came over from Pakistan and said, we know exactly where Osama is. We'll take you to him. And the Donald Rumsfeld's Defense Department wasn't the least interested in getting Osama bin Laden. They've got to make the American people think we're trying to get him. They keep telling us, all these articles in the paper, and incidentally, a whole spate of them this last week, almost as if on command. Everybody's talking about, where is Osama bin Laden? You know, well, we know he's in those hills, but gee, we just can't figure out where he is. And, you know, with the infrared technology we have, we could pick him out if he was hiding in a cave, but we're not really trying because we need him. He's the best enemy that our money can buy to focus our attention on between Osama and Saddam.
Sure, they go back and forth, and there's even a cartoon I remember that had Osama trooping along with his dialysis machine and all that goes with it behind him, and we just, we just couldn't possibly detect him at whatever he is, 6'7", with this dialysis machine dragging along behind him. So next, how does this all fit in with the larger picture? Just like I said about the Delphi technique, the psychological driving towards the consensus of the Shiites and Sunnis, what we're now seeing is the same thing at play, the dialectical process, which on the one hand says, well, you really need the UN, this really needs to be a UN operation. On the other hand, you have the Anglo-American alliance that Cecil Rhodes said should dominate the world. And this is a process, a synthesis process, driving this forward towards this consensus, a blending that will force all of the parties into this sort of agreement whereby you will have the new world come about through these ad hoc coalitions of the willing, where Americans will not be in charge of certain things, the UN will have its role to play in other nations, and so on. This is a constant process. You're starting to see it gear up in Africa, and you'll also see it take presence in the Middle East in the sense of the Palestinians versus the Israelis. Since it's about 3/4 into the program, if I could, I'd like to mention a little bit about the Ten Commandments issue, if I could.
You can certainly go right ahead.
Okay, this we've been talking about the international situation. But in terms of what you had said earlier, Dr. Stan, about dumbing down the children, I'll get to that in a second, because that fits with what's going on. It doesn't seem to, but it does fit with this recent controversy over whether the Ten Commandments can be presented in Alabama by Chief Justice Moore of the Alabama Supreme Court. Now, what's interesting to me in this is that it is not only an element of anti-Semitism if you remove these from a Jewish perspective, but as Christians who worship a Semite, Jesus Christ, and follow the teachings of Semites, the apostles, Peter, Paul, John, and so forth, that if you remove these Ten Commandments, which they've done, the federal judge has said, yes, you have to remove them, but at the same time they do not remove the pagan deities there and all over the place, in my opinion, this is anti-Semitism, and we ought to call it that. I mean, in addition to being bad in general, it is also this.
Well, you know, of course, for our listeners, there's a statue of Themis, the one of the Greek gods, you know, the one with the balances in her hand out in front of the federal building where the judge sits, who said we ought to get rid of the Ten Commandments. So that is certainly a religious symbol of the ancient Greek gods.
Absolutely. Themis is, I've been calling around. It's in the conference room at Concord, New Hampshire's state Supreme Court. It's in North Carolina where I am, at the top of the building of the state Supreme Court here. And Themis is, her father is Uranus, who is supposed to be the personification of the heavens. And her mother is supposed to be Gaia. You've heard the term Mother Gaia, who is supposed to be the personification of the earth. Now, apparently, God, the creator of the world, and his Ten Commandments given to Moses has to be kicked out, but it's perfectly all right with these judges, these federal judges who are making this ruling, to have these pagan deities. not only that, but if you look on, your listeners look on the various state seals, whether it's California or New Jersey, whatever, you've probably got some pagan deity there. You've probably got a Ceres or Minerva or something like that. I know Minerva is on the annex to the Library of Congress, and when you enter the Library of Congress, there's Neptune, another pagan deity. You've not only on public property, but often at public expense, they spent about $75,000 to put up Demeter, that statue, in front of the agricultural building in Annapolis, Maryland. Out in California, where you are, the public taxpayers' dollars to the tune of $500,000 went to put up the Mexican pagan deity Quetzalcoatl there on public property. And so it seems that while God and the Ten Commandments have to be removed, these things are just fine. Now, when you bring that up to the people, these federal judges who are removing the Ten Commandments, their response often is, well, everybody knows that these pagan deities are really myths. The problem with that line of reasoning, however, is that to an atheist who is objecting to God and the Ten Commandments, God is a myth to an atheist. But that doesn't prevent them from saying under separation of church and state they have to be removed. So if that's the criteria, then it really is, in my opinion, anti-Semitism for these federal judges to say the Ten Commandments have to be removed, but we're going to keep Themis and all of these other pagan deities on public property, often at public expense.
Well, you know, of course, I like to refer to them as anti-Christian bigots, the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union, the ACLU. But, of course, this is all coordinated. It is part of the conspiracy against God. And until people are willing to stand up and say that and say we're not going to put up with it, there is legislation now in both the House and the Senate to limit the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court in these matters. And every one of our listeners should call their elected representatives and tell them to vote in favor of that. We create enough of a fuss why they will get the Supreme Court to back off. We can do it if another people really care about preserving the religious foundation of this once great Christian nation.
That's correct. And in case your listeners say, oh, me, limit the jurisdiction of the courts, that's in the Constitution. There is a constitutional provision for Congress to limit the jurisdiction of federal courts. That's specifically in there. So this is, you know, perfectly legitimate. This isn't something revolutionary. It's provided or by the founders.
Well, even Tom Daschle a year or two ago had a special bill put through that limited the court's ability to adjudge or adjudicate something having to do with the EPA and the forests because he didn't want them stopping the fighting of forest fires in his state. So he targeted that, and the Supreme Court was not allowed to do it. It can be done. If you want to know where to get more information, go to eagleforum.org. That's eagleforum.org. Or you can call us, but get that, write your congressman and senator, here's something we can do right now, and it's an issue, and we cannot let this die.
That's absolutely right, and earlier I mentioned this all connects with education when you were talking about the youngsters being dumbed down. Remember, the global plan isn't just that you have a one-world government and economy, but a one-world religion. Now, to do that, you have to get in the schools. So related to the Ten Commandments, when God, Bible reading, school prayer were removed in the early 60s, the problem was we, in general, and the religious leaders didn't say, well, you say you're doing this under separation of church and state, and the government should be, quote, neutral regarding religion. Well, when we removed the Ten Commandments and not the pagan deities, in my opinion, that's not neutrality. Same thing in the schools. The schools for 30 years, California, Oregon, wherever, have still been teaching values. Okay, here's the point. If God is removed as the authority for the teacher telling Johnny and Janie what's right and wrong, then there is some other moral authority that is telling Janie and Johnny what's right and wrong. That's not government neutrality. That's discrimination. If you at home, if you're Jewish, Christian, whatever, are teaching that God says this is right and wrong, and the state, the government is saying there is some other moral authority, and what they ultimately said was it's the autonomous moral decision-making student based on situation ethics to determine what's right and wrong for him or her based on the situation. That's not government neutrality. We should have been yelling about that early on, and we still aren't doing it. Now, the effects of that are revealed, I think, the Josephson Institute of Ethics, I think they're in California, a few years ago, surveyed about 20,000 or so teenagers, and they found out that about three-fourths of them had lied a couple of times in the past year. and about 50% of them had actually stolen something from a store in the past year and didn't think much of it. So when you ever, whenever you, the listener, walks down the street, wherever you are, in Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles, wherever you are, and you see a couple of teenagers, one of them has probably stolen something from a store. And if you ask them, why'd you do that, they would not say that the public school teacher told them to lie, cheat, steal in this case or whatever. But what they would say is that they were taught in the public schools to make up their own minds based on the situation, what was right or wrong for them. You cannot impose your morality on them. They will decide what's right and wrong, and they may say, most of the time, I don't lie, cheat, steal, and so on. But in this case, the store owner ripped me off on the price of this sweater, whatever it is, and so I decided to shoplift, and that's perfectly okay based on what I was taught in the public school.
And of course, that's a Luciferian concept, do what thou wilt. That's the whole of the law. We're out of time, Dr. Cuddy. Thank you so very, very much for being with us. Our guest has been Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And of course, if you'd like to get his book, Secret Records Revealed, The Globalist, Now is the Dawning, September 11th, Prior Knowledge, etc., give us a call, 1-800-5-HIV-1. Bye-bye, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
We have a brand new video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen video footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, but blacked out across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. And we're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently. We're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, what really happened, it will give you the opportunity to see long-suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City, what really happened.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention that we carry Miracle 2 soap products. We can't make any medical claims for them. We will tell you that many of the people who use these products actually call me and tell me how wonderful they are, and just changed their life. I had John McTernan, who's been a guest on our program many times. He's written a book called God's Final Warning. He called me the other day, wanted to know, if we carry the product, telling me he'd used it for a year, how great it had been for his skin, how great it had been for his rash, how great it has been for his hair. We hear stories like this all the time. The products have so very many uses. If you'd like to know about them, whether you use them in your yard, whether you use them for washing, whether you use them for rashes, all we can do is suggest you try them and see if they'll help you. The telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You can get the introductory offer, or if you'd like more information, we'll certainly get it to you. And then, of course, we want to mention the Institute of the Constitution, because, of course, this is a means by which you can help to rekindle that flickering flame of freedom that's about to be extinguished in America. It's a means of teaching people about our Christian heritage, about our Christian foundation. And if you'd like to know more about the Institute of the Constitution, you call them at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. And of course, this is 12 half-hour lectures by Dr. John Eidsmo. And then there's a couple of videos by David Barton. And there's a book that comes with this. The whole packet's $99.95. But you can use it over and over again. You can teach people about our Christian history. You'll learn a lot yourself, but more than that, you'll be helping us to inform the American people about the miracle of America that once made us the envy of the entire world. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is really listener-supported, and We do what we do because we have people out across America who believe in us, and month in and month out, and they send us a gift. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you can join the Radio Liberty family and get our four best tapes of the month, our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you're subsidizing the shortwave and the internet and the various stations. And we have about 58 or 59 outlets now every single week that are hearing the truth that they'd never hear otherwise. So I wish we were 500, and maybe someday there will be. But if you believe that there is a problem and you'd like to become part of our team, why, we hope that many of you will decide right now to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, of course, the number 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd, of course, if you'd like to go to our website, it's radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com. And you can listen to our radio programs 5 hours a day. You can listen to our archive programs. You can pull down our newsletters and other things we've written and put up there that we think are important. And, of course, your job is to tell other people about our website. Your job is to tell other people about our programs. And when you're talking to people, don't tell them too much because they really can't accept the truth. But just try to get them to understand that the newspapers and the radio and television are telling the truth, and there's a reason for that, and that is they're controlled by the people in the Council on Foreign Relations. And then, of course, you can get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which will go into the background of not only the council, but all of the other groups that work behind the scenes, bound together by a common desire, a common goal, a common objective, a new world order and a new world religion. And back of that, the dark spiritual forces which rule this world. And of course, you can get the information from Radio Liberty. You can get the book by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Or you can get the book and the video and the audio tape. The book's $12.95 by itself. The Brotherhood of Darkness special is $29.95. And let me also suggest the video, the war in Iraq. And you can get that by itself, or you can get that with a syllabus, Iraq, the Untold Story. And, of course, it gives you all the documentation for all the phony wars of this last century where they've sent our boys off to fight and bleed and suffer and die when we were financing the enemy all during the wars. But we can't let the American people know that because, of course, they wouldn't then go along with the next war and the war after that. If you think we're coming home from Iraq any day now, you're sadly mistaken. The plan is to keep our troops stationed there permanently. How do I know? Because I've read their plan. We have it in their book, in our syllabus, or you can go to their website, newamericancentury.org. That's newamericancentury.org. You need to have the ability to get onto the web to get the information. There's so much out there. You've got to learn who you can trust. So much of it is CIA and disinformation, or CFR disinformation, or Project for the New American Century disinformation, or communist disinformation. But you must understand that they all work together. They all have a common goal, a new world order and a new world religion. And then, of course, we simply ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if the American people don't turn back to God, God will never again bless this nation. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for our ministers and for our leaders. We ask you to remember my ministry, Radio Liberty, the people who work with me here and labor with me and day after day, and Letitia and Joyce and my wife and my son and Steve and the others. We ask you to pray for their provision and their protection. And then, of course, until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.